Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McKellen. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Now on to the show. I'm here with Tony Stevens. He's the Manager of Public Policy and Advocacy for National Industries for the Blind, or NIB. NIB enhances the personal and economic independence of blind people by creating, sustaining, and improving employment. Tony joins us to talk about how NIB satisfies this mission. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Brian.
Before we talk about NIB, let's talk a little bit about you. According to Fox 5 Washington, you've got severe tunnel vision in one eye and totally blind in the other. Tell us more about your vision.
Sure. I was born with a congenital eye disorder called X-linked retinoschisis. It caused detachment of my retinas pretty much right after birth. And I was legally blind, you know, severe low vision in one eye and light perception in the other eye up until I was about 15. And then I got a severe bout of glaucoma that caused me to go totally blind, actually. So I was left with just that light perception in one eye, but then they were able, when I was 23, to do a slither of restoration and give back, what said the tunnel vision. It's a very narrow field, but it's a lot better than nothing. It allows me to see some shapes and objects and things like that at a pretty low acuity. But, I still find myself, I think, relying more on life as someone who doesn't really use their vision. You know, I use JAWS over other types of low vision devices that could be employed, and then I use a CNI dog for getting around and things like that. So,
why did you work in public policy?
I came into public policy sort of I'm not going to say a strange way, but for anybody that's been visually impaired or has any kind of disability or has been blind, you're a self-advocate pretty much from the point that you begin to face the barriers and obstacles that the disability places in front of you. So I've always been sort of a self-advocate. And, my passion, I think, through that led me in a pathway towards journalism. In the 1990s, I went to graduate school at the University of Georgia and completed my master's degree in journalism and worked in radio for a while. And had a chance to work in print newspaper and had taken some various paths, but had always, in a sense, sort of come back to this idea of trying to speak out on behalf of those that didn't have a voice. I mean, that was one of the reasons I got into journalism, this idea of sort of advocacy journalism and for the public interest sector. So I've always, in a sense, worked in nonprofit sector. And when we moved down with my family, about 5 years ago, we left New York City and moved to Washington, D.C. after the birth of our first kid. And, I landed a really good job right when I got in Washington, D.C. It was managing communications for a very large nonprofit. I was very excited. But it was pretty soon after I started the job that it became pretty apparent that the manager I had really didn't know how to work with a person who was blind. The manager had said to another employee that, they didn't know what to do with Tony because he was blind and, there were no supports. I didn't have JAWS. I didn't have any of the real supports I needed. And it was grueling, Brian. I mean, it was honestly one of the worst experiences I ever had from a work setting. And I began to think to myself as like, if I've had all this wonderful experience and lots of people along the way that have lifted me up and given me opportunities, it came to a point where I was like, wow, what is it like for other people that haven't had those doors open? And lucky for me, shortly after I left that job, an opportunity with National Industries for the Blind opened up, and they needed someone basically to go up to Capitol Hill and tell the stories that I felt like I had faced in the discrimination in the workplace and the difficulties and the obstacles, and basically to share with folks on Capitol Hill and within what we call inside the beltway, but with coalitions and other groups, sort of the stories and concerns that people who are blind face when trying to find employment. I mean, and a lot of people know that our employment numbers are very low. Our non-participation rate in the labor sector is 70%. which is pretty staggering. So, you know, I think it was that doorway of opportunities to be able to, again, find ways to tell that story. And for me, it was much more personal this time because of the job I had before this. You know, that when the public policy position opened up at NIB, I took it and has been very, very fruitful since then.
And it's been very fruitful to work at NIB. You got to tell us about NIB and its mission, though.
Sure, most definitely. So National Industries for the Blind, or NIB, we've been around for a little over 77 years. Well, we were a result of what was called the Wagner O'Day Act, which was passed on June of 1938, and we'll actually be celebrating our 77th anniversary, I should say, this August, August 10th. But the idea was, at that time, there were a number of nonprofits that were providing multiple services for people who were blind. There still weren't a lot of employment opportunities then. It was even worse, you know, because there was hardly any, you know, it was way before ADA. Accessibility was not even really thought of yet in a lot of ways. And, you know, there were some nonprofits that were basically where folks could go and find job opportunities in their community, local places, the White Houses for the Blind, and you know, groups like that. And they thought of an idea and were able to work with members of Congress to get a bill introduced that essentially would say, okay, the federal government is a huge purchasing power within our gross domestic product for the United States. And there's a lot of opportunities that could be made here at home for people who can, you know, work and who are able to work. And these nonprofits felt that, you know, people who are blind could do things like other people in manufacturing. So they passed the Wagner O'Day Act in 1938, and shortly after they realized, well, we need an organization to help manage this idea of nonprofits producing goods and for the federal government. So NIB was a result of those nonprofits coming together and saying, we need to try to have an association that can represent us all in Washington, because nonprofits are, you know, lead by the heart, and sometimes it takes a lot of head-heavy knowledge to be able to manage federal procurement and policies and ways to get, you know, initiatives and jobs and things like that created and make new products for the government. So the program went on up until the 70s, and then it was amended and called the Javits-Wagner O'Day Act, which is what it's known by today, 1971. And what that did was it expanded this idea of procurement opportunity for creating goods, and now it added services, so service contracts for the federal government, and it would be for all people with disabilities. But NIB was able to be grandfathered in. And then there was a second nonprofit that started called NISH, as it was known, but recently they changed their name to what's now known as Source America. And so they've been working now for a little over 40 years, just at about 40 years, and they represent a large number of organizations around the country as well that focus predominantly on services. And we traditionally have been seen as the manufacturing sort of side of providing job opportunities for people with disabilities. But, you know, in that, over the past 10 years, we've really expanded our service contract opportunities, due in part a lot to the expansion of assistive technology and accessible, you know, websites and programs and software development that has made a lot of really good service contract opportunities where computers can be used to really break down some barriers in the service sector. So, you know, we do the manufacturing side, which is where we make everything from uniforms for the military to the classic pen. If you've ever gone to a post office and had to use a pen, they have these iconic pens that say U.S. government on them. We make all those pens. It's all under what's called the brand of Skillcraft. And those goods and services, or several thousand of them, we provide under what now is called the Ability One program. The Javits-Wagner O'Day Act was changed to have more modern branding several years ago under the Bush administration. And so now it's known as what's called Ability One. And both NIB and Source America work together to work to create those jobs. So our role is that central nonprofit in Washington that helps get the contracts. We help get it as a preferred source, meaning the federal government needs to buy these products when they go on a preferred source procurement list. The U.S. Ability One Commission, which is a very small federal agency, works with us and Source America to get those on. And then the revenues that are brought in help to sustain a lot of the programs and supports that we provide also to our agencies. So we don't just help them get these contracts, but we also provide a lot of valuable programs, training programs, you know, things. And we just launched a cyber security type initiative to train people in cybersecurity. We've done that for what's called also CMS, which is contract closeout, where we give people free training. Anybody, it doesn't have to be someone at our agency, but anybody around the country who's blind. We have business leadership programs and a lot of the development and research and rehab engineers. It's, you know, we're about 150 people, more than 150 in our organization, and they're all committed at the end of the day, not to raising money, but trying to find ways that through the sale of goods and services, we can get more and more people who are blind careers and upward mobility opportunities for jobs.
That's great. One of our listeners, Min Ha from Boston, Massachusetts, writes, does NIB provide any career building opportunities for blind and visually impaired college students to help them prepare for the rigorous world of employment? How do you answer Min's question?
Well, that's a good question, Min. I think one of the things that we value at NIB is our associated network. We're a family. We're a large umbrella of 94 nonprofits around the country. A number of those are in Boston or in New England or in the Northeast. You know, the Carroll Center is one of the ones off the top of my head that's one of the larger, more established ones. All of these nonprofits don't just create goods and services for people who are blind, or not for people who are blind, excuse me, for the federal government and employ people who are blind. But a large number of the rehabilitation for people who are blind takes place at these, and the job placement, the career, and the trial work type experiences that you get going through the vocational rehabilitation program. You know, there's a lot of opportunities through these networks. And what I'd say is probably the best thing to do is to go to our website, and you'll see a members link, and then you can look for what region you're in. And I would say find that local nonprofit and just reach out to them. Tell them you're a person who's in college that's wanting to get on-the-job experience. If it's trial work, that maybe VR can help pay for some of that or get some assistance in getting you in a trial work setting. You know, to try out a career path or a new opportunity, or, you know, if it's the kind of thing where they can help you in a lot of ways in the community by making connections. We offer as well our programs, like I said, the CMS program, which is the contract management support, where we have a partnership with Defense Acquisition University and actually work to place people in contract management closeout jobs, which is a procurement. It's a professional, it's a business type job. But, you know, it's for a lot of people a chance to get their foot in the door in this sort of world of finance and business. So those are a few ideas, I think. Hopefully that can help.
They're very good ideas indeed. Who are some of NIB's associated nonprofit agencies, by the way?
We have the lighthouses that you often hear of. Not every lighthouse in the country is a member of our organization, but a large number of them are. So the Seattle Lighthouse out in Washington is one of the larger ones, Chicago, San Francisco, Dallas and San Antonio, Lighthouse International in New York. We have the Carroll Center in Boston. But then oftentimes, too, you'll hear it called, you know, Industries for the Blind is often a moniker that our nonprofits will wear as well. So we have our Winston-Salem Industries for the Blind or Blind Industries and Services of Maryland. You know, it's a wide range of nonprofits. Some employ, you know, a dozen people, and some employ several hundred people. It's a pretty large family and network of nonprofits around the country.
There's the Section 508 Assurance Service that looks into whether websites and systems are accessible for the conformance with this particular section. In the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, first tell us about the service and a little bit about this section in the Rehab Act and how they work hand in hand.
Sure. The Rehab Act was, as you said, passed in 1973, and it's been amended over the years, most recently actually last year in the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is going through the regulations process now. But it was, in a sense, the first comprehensive rehabilitation legislation that Congress had passed. And, you know, it predates the ADA by 17 years. And what it basically set up was this idea that, okay, if the federal government's going to be giving you money, i.e. through grants or through contracts, if we're going to be hiring you or paying you to do something for the federal government, you have to make it an equal playing field. And in that, it needs to be accessible for people with disabilities. Section 508 of the Rehab Act focuses specifically on telecommunications or technologies. At the time, it was telephone. So, you know, it comes into that area where you know, we started to see, you know, things for the hearing impaired that could help them in the telephone systems. And there were, you know, radio reading services and things like that, that, you know, different accessible things that were more traditional broadcast. That since has gone to include, with the expansion and explosion of the internet, online media, telecommunications, and mobile phones, you know, and any, basically, so anything that uses a device, an electronic digital device, or any kind of communications device, needs to be accessible, and that falls under a bunch of guidelines in 508. If anyone has ever done web work, they know that 508 can be pretty complex, and oftentimes folks might even say, oh, our website is Section 508 compliant. And if you're a blind user and you've gone to the website, you've probably said many times, no, it's not. So what our service does, and there's a number of groups that do it, but I think in some ways we see ourselves as experts because obviously we try to practice what we preach. But also, too, I mean, we're the users of it. So we find ourselves acutely aware of these type things and found it was a pretty good niche that we could get into on the service contract side. So, you know, it's basically going through and assuring and making sure and making recommendations for federal contractors and for federal government agencies to find out, are they compliant and where are the areas that they need improvement, and making sure that it's not just visiting a website, but it's also documents and it's programs on the back end. You know, someone with the federal government might be trying to work on a new computer system that is a large database or something like that that's been uniquely created for that federal agency. And they get on there and they find out, well, JAWS doesn't work at all with this thing. So part of the service sector that focuses on that 508 assurance goes in there, and they're the mechanics. They make sure it's fixed, or they give you the recommendations and the diagnosis, and basically get it up to speed. So we found it's a good service contract opportunities that, you know, kind of fit within who we are as well, by being sort of experts in blindness.
NIB is associated with the NAEPB. That's the National Association for the Employment of People Who Are Blind. Who and where is this organization?
NAPB is a membership organization. Not every member of NAPB is one of our associated members, but the overwhelming, over 95% of their membership is. They are a nonprofit that focuses on the interest that the agencies encounter on more of a personal level and in their own development. And in a sense, they stand in a way to be a representation of themselves in partnership with us. But also, too, they, you know, we find ourselves at times being able to engage in dialogues with them to find out, okay, what are the needs? So it's a collection of the nonprofit agencies that focus on these type employment settings through Ability One or through other state contracts. In providing job opportunities for goods and services production and their own nonprofit. And, you know, they're able to dig into the trenches, if you will, on, okay, what are the things on operations? What are the things on communications and other things like that they need to focus on? And we partner with them throughout the year in a lot of ways. We have our public policy forum each year where we join together and go up to Capitol Hill to talk about legislative issues. We have our national conference and expo in October of each year, which brings them together, and it's the trade industry type association conference. And they, in a sense, you asked, where are they? They have a voting membership. So every couple of years they get a new president, and that new president is a CEO of one of the nonprofit member organizations. And so that'll float around. Currently, it's the CEO of Vision Corps, which is one of our large nonprofits in Lancaster in southeast Pennsylvania. They have several agencies and offices throughout southeast Pennsylvania. So their CEO, Dennis Steiner, is currently the president and CEO of NAPB. And so, you know, in a couple of years, they'll elect someone else. So in a sense, their office will, you know, move to wherever that new CEO is. Essentially, they come together at NIB throughout the year as well for board meetings, and they have a big annual retreat each year to get together and do strategic development initiatives and things like that to hash out. So,
how about NIB's public policy team? They monitor and analyze the legislation and the policies on issues that impact blind people.
Our public policy team, you know, we focus on a wide range of areas on Capitol Hill. Obviously, rehabilitation is one of those. We're very much engaged with the recent regulatory changes and proposed rule for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act that I mentioned earlier that houses the Rehab Act revisions. So rehabilitation is something we focus on. Federal procurement is something we focus on. We're constantly looking at appropriations because obviously we are, you know, to some degree, we are federal contractors. So we're constantly paying attention to where the federal government is mapping out its future for appropriations and for spending. You know, what's going to happen in the federal agencies, if it's the Interior or Department of Defense or General Services Administration. So, you know, the appropriations is a big thing we monitor. Like I said, the rehabilitation is something else we monitor. And really, we in a sense, of the blindness organizations have carved ourselves sort of that niche of, you know, our focus is employment. So anything on workforce development or anything in those camps, you know, we tend to steer our ears toward and monitor on Capitol Hill and engage members of Congress and try to, you know, cultivate champions and allies when we can on issues that encompass, you know, anything employment and blindness related, and then anything that involves the Ability One program as well.
What are some of the other issues and challenges that face NIB today, and what's NIB doing to address them?
One of the issues over recent years has been the shift towards greater fiscal austerity. You know, we had what was called the sequestration a couple years ago, a result of the Budget Control Act. And that basically was a 10% hatchet across the federal government. It has since become a little bit more guided and directed, but it came at a time when already, you know, like the Department of Defense was slowing down in its Central Asia campaigns. And so we had slowdowns already in federal spending. You know, there was a hiring freeze when Obama administration came in due to the looming deficit that came after the 2008 Great Recession. So, you know, tax revenues decreased and the federal government overall saw a huge drop. And it's been really working to wrangle in its deficit and its debt. That's hurt all federal contractors, especially us, in some ways doubly, because not only have we been hit as federal contractors, but we've also been hit as rehabilitation providers. So, you know, there's also the cuts that we're feeling, the pinch in rehabilitation services. So it's you know, we fall in that unique situation where, you know, it's trying to restructure ourselves in this new era of new government, which is leaner, or it's working to be leaner. You know, it's more streamlined, and it's finding ways to pass savings on, and that involves federal contractors, which we are part of. In taking that pinch, trying to work with less. It's difficult because, you know, our efficiencies are not robotics that can be fine-tuned, but we work with human beings. And our goal is to employ as many people as possible. So, you know, whereas some manufacturing can outsource to China or outsource, you know, if they're able to, you know, the Buy America Act won't let that happen with, like, Defense Department, stuff like that. It still has to be made in America. But where some stuff can be outsourced or downsized in factories, you know, we really try to keep our jobs. And it hurts when we have to, you know, due to slowdowns we had to let some people go, and it really hurt a good number of people. So the federal spending is probably the biggest issue. And we find that the remedy is, because we don't try to fight the fact that we need to live more lean and try to wrestle with the debt, because it's not going to help us 30, 40 years down the road. But I think one of the things we've been trying to really push and had great success this past year with, you know, Senator Schumer and Congressman Sanford Bishop and a number of other members of Congress, both Republicans and Democrats as well, a good number of Republicans in the House and Senate as well have been supporters. You know, we have found ourselves able to basically let the federal government know, because one of the big problems we face is called essentially the same, where folks will inadvertently purchase products that they don't realize they need to be purchasing products from us because it's preferred source. And they have, you know, these like basic government versions of credit cards, and they'll go to like a box chain store, if you will, or another online box chain store online and purchase the wrong products. And that hurts us because that keeps people from getting jobs who, you know, otherwise they're out there and they're going to fall into dependency on entitlements more. And, you know, so it's hurting the government twice in that sense. So, you know, we have been having great success over the past year and really raising awareness towards this idea of essentially the same, and trying to find ways to get large organizations within the federal government, like the General Services Administration, which is kind of the procurement arm of the federal government for purchasing and infrastructure, to really adhere and embrace the Ability One program. Because the more and more we have federal contractor employees retire, federal employees retire, the more and more we have people coming on that don't know about Ability One. And it's kind of a trickle-down effect that hurts us in the long run.
How can our listeners become clients of NIB?
You know, we have a website, Careers with Vision, that's a partnership collaboration with American Foundation for the Blind. You can go online and look now at what job opportunities are available for people who are blind at any of our associated nonprofit agencies. Again, go to our nonprofits and look up the membership list, or even reach out to ourselves and advocacy department if you're a person trying to find a way to empower your voice. Or if you're a person looking for a job, we also have links on our site to our human resources that can put you in touch with folks. If you're trying to get services, and if it's rehabilitation services and mobility and training and braille instruction for the first time, or if you feel that you're needing a career change, or that you are trying to get a job and have people keep telling you no, and we don't know what to do with you and things like that. You know, the stories we hear every day from people who come to our agencies, we're here as a support. So please go to our website. It's www.nib.org and reach out to the various people throughout that on the areas of interest where we have the contact information, and let us do what we can to try to help you be as independent and accessible as you can as someone who's blind.
Tony, this information is going to encourage our listeners to become NIB clients and land the jobs of their dreams. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode or past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out. Join me, Brian McKellen, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview famous and inspirational blind individuals and other specialists about a wide variety of topics, providing you with the steps to achieve your dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, and repeats every 2 hours overnight and throughout the next day, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream.